Hello and welcome to Mum's Work and Chaos. We all know the saying, it takes a village to raise a child, but where is that village? Well, I started this podcast to help you find yours, and I'm joined by some amazing guests this season, talking about subjects such as fast fashion, menopause, sex education, and teenage behaviour, just to name a few. So join me this season, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to this episode of Mum's Work and Chaos with me, Louise. Today I'm joined by the lovely Leanne, the realistic health visitor, and the wonderful Emma, dietitian with a difference, to discuss growth charts. Now, this was a fun topic. So both of you sort of put out a post about growth charts around about the same time. I know you weren't collaborating, but you just did, which was awesome. And it really piqued my interest because when I had my first, I was one of those awful people. I had a weigh-in centre literally on my road. And so I'd take her every week, I'd get her weighed. It was just so happened to be at the same time as one of our baby classes. And so they'd give us 10 minutes to get out the class quickly and go weigh our children. And I was meticulous with this line on this chart. And I was like really in it, like, is she the right weight? Is she following like the predicted line? And I got quite obsessive about it, I'm not going to lie. And then when I had my second, we were in COVID and I couldn't do it anyway. And I actually found like the ignorance of not knowing whether she was following the line and everything was actually quite nice. Like, because I wasn't so obsessed. I wasn't so worried about whether she was eating correctly and all that sort of stuff. But I knew she was healthy because I could see with my own eyes that she was a healthy child. But I think it's quite an interesting thing, isn't it? Like how obsessive you can actually get over these little charts and these red books that we're handed when we have a baby. It's an interesting one.
It really is, and it's funny you should say that because I used to take my nearly 11-year-old to be weighed every week as well when he was young. But obviously that was a very long time ago. But I think it's really. It's funny how we get into these habits and rely so much on these centile charts when actually the guidance to have your child weighed, as long as they're a healthy, well child, is only like kind of 4 or 5 throughout the course of their childhood before the age of 5, really. So just the mandated checks is what we recommend. And like I said, that's not weekly at all, and it's not even monthly. So it is funny how we kind of really get hung up on these charts.
Yeah, I think we do as well, because like, especially, I mean, for me, for example, like, because Olivia was born early, like 36 weeks, and obviously her weight was really low, you know, like 2 kilos type per level. We were really monitored, and again, you get really, even I like get upset. In the end, I just bought baby scales because I was like, I can't face going to a clinic like every week to get her weighed. And then, you know, I felt like there was lots of, because I was a dietitian anyway, so I kind of knew how the charts worked. But yeah, I just felt it was easier just to have the scales and be like, right, well, I can keep an eye on it. And then I don't have to feel that. I don't know. I felt like a little bit like you were going to be judged, like if she'd suddenly lost, like, because we kept being threatened with, you know, like, if she loses any more, you're going to be in hospital and she's going to be tube fed. So it felt like more pressure as well. So I do really remember. And I really remember tracking like everything she had in a bottle as well. We had like an app and everything. It was like really obsessional. And I look back now and I just think, God, that was just too much. Like, but it's really hard because I think, you know, you get into your head, you get so worried, don't you, that they're going to end up in hospital, they're going to be tube fed. And you just think, oh, I don't want to go to hospital. And it does sort of worry parents. So I can understand. Know where they're coming from as well.
It's tricky, isn't it? Like you've got to find that balance as a parent, but then equally, like, you know, you encounter all these different healthcare professionals along your journey, and everyone has their own opinion. I mean, you're a person regardless of your training. you're going to make assumptions, and you're going to have these, you know, you're going to give certain advice. And I think sometimes it's tricky when you're trying to, you know, trust your gut, but also, you know, trust the healthcare professional that's talking to you. It can be quite a funny one. I think one thing that I was a bit nervous with my first was I breastfed all my kids at the beginning. And I mean, I hadn't grown up around
other children, really. I'd never been like an older child around a baby or, you know, even really, like, had stuff to do with my nieces and nephews, but I wasn't as, you know, involved as an auntie and things to know what was coming, what to expect and everything. And I think with our feeding journey, she started off really well, which was great. And when I had her weighed the first time, she'd lost weight and I felt like such a failure. It was like, oh my God, you know, I'm not feeding her right. She's not having enough milk. She's lost weight. What am I doing wrong? And the health visitor reassured me and she was just like, no, that's normal. Actually, she's lost less weight than most babies, but it's really common, isn't it? It's not something that we should be too massively worried about.
No, absolutely. And in that first week of life, it is very expected, really, that a baby will lose a little bit of weight. There's very few babies that don't. You will get the occasional one, but in general, when I go out to do a new birth visit, there has been some degree of weight loss, and it is very normal and it's not concerning to us. What we kind of hope is that by the age of 2 weeks that they're back to their birth weight, and that is achieved 99.9% of the time in my experience. So yeah, it's absolutely nothing to worry about. It just takes babies time to get used to feeding, to learn how to feed, to start waking for feeds themselves, realizing that they're hungry. And it's the same with any skill that a baby has to learn. They're not going to get it the first time that they do it. It's that process of them developing that skill, and then the weight should steadily continue to follow a centile up or down one. And we're kind of happy with that then.
So with, like, with the growth charts, obviously you've got the weight line, but then you've also got the length or height line, haven't you? And I mean, I guess the way my mum describes me growing and the way I've seen my kids growing as well is they always like put on a bit of weight and then they have this growth spurt and then they're suddenly like so much taller or longer than they were before. It's actually quite common, isn't it? Not just to like to actually drop on the weight but go up the height and so on. It doesn't follow the same course necessarily. It's not going to be that straight bow across the page, is it?
So you get a lag with height as well. So you do often sometimes see, especially if a child like a child that's losing weight, for example, like, you know, and like really restrictive eater and something like that, their weight will start dropping but their height will often stay on the same line for, and it can be sort of up to 6 months or so before you notice that height starts to drop down as well and they're faltering, you know, in their height or length as well. So height often is a bit of a lag as well, so you sometimes do get that as well in certain children. But again, with length is done up to 2 years and then heights after 2 years. So it's really important. And I would say, and you probably say the same, Jan, but length is often the most inaccurate because unless they're measured on a length board, which if anyone's had a child and they've tried to get them on a length board, especially if they're not just a little tiny baby, but they're about a year or a bit years old, trying to get a child to lie still perfectly on a length board. And if you imagine on the centile chart, if you change it by like 1 centimetre or 2 centimetres difference, that can jump up like literally nearly a centile. So the number of times that I've had some really odd lengths reported from parents and I've been like, not sure that length is right. So yeah, you should, ideally, they should be on the length board. I think it's like 2 or 3 times you're meant to take the measurement and take a sort of average. But trying to get a child to do that is not easy.
Yeah, so the guidance for actual length and height measurements is only 3 times. So there's like the 6, well, this is under school age. So the first one would be done at 6 weeks, and technically they shouldn't measure the length at birth. Now, some people do, but it was causing a lot of anxiety for parents because they would be doing the length measurement in hospital as soon as they were born. It wasn't accurate. And then we do it at 6 weeks and it would look like they've shrank or shrunk. it was causing a lot of anxiety for parents. So the guidance for that now is for them to be measured at 6 weeks, 9 months, and then 2 years. like I said, preschool age. And that just gives us a better overview, really, of how the length is growing rather than doing it more frequently, getting all these inaccurate length measurements. We just get a general overview of how that child is growing. And that's the best way, really, for a well child to look at their growth.
And then, Lillian, they're still doing head circumferences, aren't they, when they're born now as well? So is it just the weight and the head circumferences, or they stopped head circumferences as well?
So that varies as well. I did a new birth yesterday where they'd done it at birth, but it's very rare that they get that done at birth. We just do that at 6 weeks, actually. And then unless there's any concerns, it's not something really that we continue to monitor.
Yeah, I thought that with head circumference, you don't really ever see it again. And I would, as a dietitian, I would only ever measure length and weight. I've never, unless there's been a concern, like they've been under the paediatrician and they're worried about the head size, or, you know, there's some concern. I haven't really seen it, and I've never taken it in a clinic.
Let me backtrack. We do it at 2 weeks at the new birth, and then we do it at 6 weeks, the head circumference. And as long as that growth between 2 weeks and 6 weeks is consistent growth, then we leave it at that, unless there are concerns.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, thank you.
It's funny. I think so with my first, all of that was done in the room with us. I had her at hospital and it was all done there. With my second, I feel like they took her away and did everything. And the same with my third. So my third was accidentally born at home. She was very fast. She was very fast and we were not prepared. and so the paramedics came out and by that point she was already here. And then we got taken to hospital. I had to go in the ambulance, but she had to be taken by my husband to hospital because apparently when she's inside me, we are one patient. When she is outside me, we are two. And you can only transport one patient by ambulance. It's very weird.
I've never heard of that. They wouldn't let me and my baby go separately, so that's very strange, isn't it?
Yeah. So I was in this, you know, ambulance, and I was like, oh, this is very strange. I don't have a baby with me. My husband was driving her, met us at the hospital. And then again, they took her away and did everything instead of doing it in the room. So I don't have any clue what they'd done. But I always assumed that the measurements that they took at birth were what they used to come up with the growth charts. Obviously, I am wrong because the growth charts are just standardised, aren't they, across everything. Yeah, okay, cool. See, yeah. I am a proper layman.
There are different growth charts as well. Like, so you've got your standardized, you know, your ones, your girl and your boy one. But you've also got, there are other ones, like there's a Down syndrome ones, and there are other genetic conditions that have their own growth charts as well.
And the preterm ones as well. For your babies that are premature.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Excellent. So but the thing about red books is that they're all compiled for you know, they're not like pre-made, are they? So you can like whack in the right growth chart, I'm guessing. So if you do have a preemie baby who turns up, you can put in the right growth chart for that child. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, cool. There's just a boy chart and a girl chart. So it's a boy book and a girl book. And then if you have a girl or a boy, you get the relevant one. But if it needs adjusting slightly, that's something we would usually do. So if it's a baby with Down syndrome, then we would get that chart and add that. Or if it's a baby that's born at, you know, 28 weeks or whatever, then we would get that preterm chart and add that into the book.
And also their weight is also corrected as well. So, for example, we're like, Olivia's like 4 weeks early. So her weight would always be, so basically you plot it where they are, you know, their age, and then you track back like however many weeks. So she was 4 weeks, and then you track back those 4 weeks as though she was 4 weeks earlier to work out her weight, which is why sometimes some parents will see little, like a dot and then little lines backwards and then another little dot, and that will be where their centile is as well. So we do also plot for adjusted age as well if they're early.
Yeah, so one of my friends, her son was I think 6 weeks early, and she would always like plot back whenever she was talking about like his development as well. So she was always like, oh well, he's doing this now, or he hasn't done this yet, but then he's 6 weeks back, so actually he's still on track for this, that and the other. And it was like, oh okay, cool.
So definitely, yeah, it's a fun one. Take into consideration that corrected age, because it's really relevant, you know. It is we have the actual age and the corrected age, kind of go by.
Yeah. So something else.
The corrected age is done up to 2 years old, isn't it? Where you, Leanne, where we go to two, and then we don't tend to. I remember on her, Olivia's growth chart, it was only so long that I went backwards.
So it really depends on the level of prematurity, really. My understanding is, we correct it until the age of two, but actually the guidance is sometimes only up until the age of one. So I guess depends on the level of prematurity, the consistent growth, how their development is doing. And if that kind of levels up by the time that they get to 1 year. But it may vary from professional to professional based on the individual child.
Yeah.
Excellent. So something else that that you mentioned before we hit record, Emma, was specifically about growth in that first, just over the age of one, wasn't it? And how that plots against a growth chart as well, because it is quite different once you get past that age, past the year, it all sort of changes and develops, doesn't it?
Yeah, so that first year is when they really grow, and you know they gain a lot of weight. And you can see this if you look in your ed book and you look at the curve. You can see how it really kind of goes up quite steeply. And then after one, the growth really starts to grow. They still gain weight, and they should still be gaining weight, but it slows a lot. So you're only looking at sort of like, obviously depending on the child, sort of 2 to 3 kilo weight gain. So I get a lot of parents that will come to me and say, they haven't really gained any weight. They've only, you know, they've gone from, you know, 12 kilos to 12.2, and it's been like months. And I'm like, okay, well, that's okay. And, you know, it is much slower, but it does cause parents a lot of anxiety and worry at that particular age. But then also that's partly why, you know, children often become, you know, they'll wean and they eat really, really well and they eat everything. And then they get to that sort of like 18 months age, and then they start, you know, rejecting more foods, not eating as much. And often you'll find that they'll eat less than what they did at 12 months old. And again, it's just because often their growth has slowed as well. So I know that caused parents a lot of worry as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, because like when we started weaning with our first, we did the whole baby-led weaning thing. We just sort of, you know, boiled vegetables and gave her what we were having, really. With my second, she really liked like pouches and stuff, whereas my first didn't. And so with two kids and working and everything, we ended up relying quite a lot on the pre-made stuff. But you know, we followed all the guidance and got her up to, you know, eating solids, and she'd try things off our plates and stuff as well. And then with our third, she was a proper mix. She was really interested in what was on our plates and wanted to try things. But then sometimes, you know, she felt lazy. She just wanted to, you know, eat a pouch or something instead, or that she had preferences, which was great because it showed that she could make up her own mind, which was brilliant. She's very self-assured. But it is funny. You visibly notice it, not just on a chart, but actually you can see that the way they grow is changing. Like they've gone through all of that development at the beginning. Their brains are knitting together. You can really see a difference in their learning and picking up walking. And I mean, considering that within 9 months, Hannah was walking is just insanity. Like that's such a short amount of time when you think about it. They've gone from this little baby who's only just like come out and developed a cherry sized stomach to be able to handle milk, to then being able to walk and talk and sort of, you know, express an interest in certain toys and things on TV and stuff like that as well. It's just bonkers how much they develop in that amount of time. That once we get past that first year of actual like physical bodybuilding development, it then turns more into that brain development as well, doesn't it? They're learning the cognitive side of things. So the physical growth is going to slow down, isn't it? Because now we're getting into brain knitting, learning our numbers, learning more words, growing our vocabulary and picking up that cognitive reasoning as well. So it's going to change a lot, isn't it?
It is. And I think that's a really common perception of development. But actually the brain from when you're pregnant with that baby, the brain is developing rapidly. But we don't see that. We focus so much on the physical growth of the child, but actually the brain is developing the fastest that it ever will during that period. And so, you know, my message when I go is to say, you know, you'll hear health visitors harp on about this all the time, but the first 1,001 days is so important for that brain development, not just their growth, and it all kind of has that knock-on impact. And so I'm looking at the growth, and we're interested in growth, of course, because it tells us a lot. But actually, if your child is a well child, just stand back and look at them, you know, look and see, do they look well? Are they growing in their clothes? Are their clothes size going up? Do they feel heavier to carry? And actually, we don't need to medicalise children that are well in the community and have got no additional problems. And so it's really tough, it is, because it's kind of out of our control if we're not regularly getting our children weighed, especially with a breastfed baby when we don't know how much they're taking. But I just say to parents, you know, just step back. And like you said earlier, Louise, you did it with your second one, and you could see that she's growing well and she looks well and she's healthy. And that's really all that we need to do. Of course, if you're worried that they're unwell and they look visibly like they're losing weight and they've stopped eating altogether, then go and get that support. But if they're a well child, you know, it's really important just to not medicalize them, is what I'm trying to say, because that is something that we see very regularly with even with people taking their body temperatures of the baby all the time to make sure they're the right temperature and go to lengths like that, really. And I just say, you know, you don't need to. Your child is a well child. Just step back and you can see that they're happy, they're thriving, they're, you know, lovely bouncy baby. And that's just be reassured by your mum judgment of your own child.
I think that's something I did as well, was like I had a thermometer in her room to see how warm it was, because her room had two outer facing walls, so it was always a bit chillier in there. So I always have a thermometer in there, and then I also had this thing on my phone, a picture that I'd saved, a screenshot that told you how to dress your baby for different temperatures. Because I honestly didn't have a clue. I was handed this brand new child and they were like, off you go. Yeah. And I was like, what do I do now?
It's
like,
scary.
Yeah, I didn't have a clue. They don't teach you any of this stuff unless you go to like NCT classes, which I didn't. We just didn't have.
See, I did, and I still didn't feel like I had a clue. I remember when, like, when she was first born, and I was literally like, I don't even know how to hold her. Like, she's so tiny, I'm just going to drop her. And I remember my friend coming, and she already had two boys, and she was just like holding her in like one arm with her bag, and I was like, oh my god, how are you doing that? How do you hold a baby in one arm without dropping it? Like, I was literally there. And I remember even like nappies, like going, we're like, obviously, I changed like my niece's number like once, but you don't really change other children's nappies, like, why would you particularly? And I was literally like, and the nurse just looked at me, she was like, do you want me to show you how to do it? And I was like, yeah, can you? Like, no skill at all. And I did NCT and we didn't learn any of that.
This is the thing, we didn't have the money for all of that stuff. And so, like, you know, we'd gone through all this stuff, we were handed this baby, they were like, here you go, feed it, change it, look after it, wash it, weigh it, we're good. And I was like, right, okay. And actually for me, I fed her a lot because she wouldn't have a dummy. It was like anytime she cried, I'd end up feeding her. And so she actually gained a lot of weight. She was just like this little round ball of a baby because she was constantly feeding. And then when we did start weaning, she dropped a lot of weight because she was now eating food. She wasn't soaked. She wasn't crying because she was hungry. She was just crying because she wanted a cuddle or something. And I was starting to really learn those cues. And so she had lost, she did lose quite a lot of weight between those from 6 months onwards. But you could still see that she was a healthy, happy child, but she hadn't dropped the centiles to a degree that, you know, a health visitor was concerned and then referring me to a paediatrician. But on that note, we have had a question come through. This listener said that over the last 5 months, her daughter, her child has dropped from the 97th centile to the 50th. She said the paediatrician isn't concerned and said that she will find her line, but I'm still worried. So it's, I don't remember us the dropping that much that, you know, none of us were concerned, obviously. I don't have her red book in front of me. I was going to get it out. I have asked for more information. Unfortunately, she hasn't got back to me yet. But like just from that message, what can we say about that?
We'd need to know, explore it a little bit further to understand a little bit more. Is this drop on the centile? You know, what age are they now? What centile did they start on at birth? Is it that they started on, say, for example, the 50th centile, but then they went up to the 98th and now they've come back down to the 50th? Or is it that they started on a higher centile and it's just centile and it's just dropped down after that? So we would need to know a little bit more information on that to guide appropriately. But something else that I would be interested to know is what centile the length of your child is on as well. Because we do look at, if there are any concerns with the weight or drops on the centile, we do look at the length measurement as well to see where about that is and whether that's in proportion with the weight. And then, of course, we're looking at other things, like are they displaying any other signs of being unwell? So have they got reduced appetite? Are they not eating well? Are they any vomiting or anything like that that's contributing towards it? Or is it just that, you know, otherwise your child is really well, but we can just see that it has come down on the centile? So there'd be quite a lot of consideration with this one. And definitely something which it sounds like you've done already, seeing the paediatrician or your doctor or whoever it is. Definitely get that advice and support so it can be looked at kind of from a few different perspectives. But we just need to know a little bit more, really. But it's good that you're under the paediatrician and that they've reassured you that everything's looking well. And I guess that's because they've looked at all the things that I've just spoken about and are reassured by those.
Yeah, because normally I was just going to say we would look at like a 2 centile. If they've lost, you know, dropped 2 centiles, that's when we're normally concerned. If they drop just 1 centile, they're 1 centile, that's fine. But 2 centiles is normally when we're concerned, unless they're on the bottom centile. So if they're on the 2nd centile and they drop 1 to the 0.4, then we would be worried. But obviously if they're up around that sort of 90 something and they drop 2, then we are concerned. But also the other thing is, it's how accurate are the weights? Were they wearing a nappy when they were weighed? You know, have they got all their clothes on? When were the measurements taken? See, I'd want to potentially re-measure as well, just to double check, and maybe measure monthly just to keep an eye on it as well, and just to see. But yes, like Leanne said, there's so many questions I would ask and so many different things as to what could actually be the cause as well. But like I said, if they're under the paediatrician and they're not worried, I'm assuming they've, you know, looked at all of that and they've looked at all the information. Again, sometimes you can just get one weight that's completely wrong as well. I've had that multiple times in clinics where they've been referred to see me and we looked at the weight and there's one where they've gone from like the 50th up to 90th and then back down to 50th. And I'm like, I think that 90 something was probably wrong in the first place. So
it's funny, isn't it?
Sometimes that can even be the birth weight that's documented wrong, unfortunately, which then ultimately looks like there's been a bigger drop than what there actually has. And obviously that can be quite concerning. But if that's the case, your health visitor should track that and monitor it and be reassured that actually that first weight was probably inaccurate, and track that until they're satisfied that your child is growing consistently and at a healthy rate.
Yeah, like you said, Emma, there's so many different things that can affect the weight of your baby, aren't there? Like how full the nappy is as well. If you're having your baby weighed with a nappy on, they always make me take it off. But even whether
you should do.
Yeah, but even whether they've had a feed just before they're weighed or they need a poo, all of that sort of stuff affects the weight of your baby when they're being weighed. So it could be that they've literally just had an explosion, and not had their feed yet, and their weight's lower. But then the minute they've had a feed, it will pop back up again. It makes all the difference, doesn't it? It's crazy.
Which is why one weight's never a good measurement. So whenever I get sent, like someone will send me, oh, I'm worried about my child, here's their weight, I'm always like, I need to know a lot more information than just one weight.
Yeah.
And discrepancies of scales as well. So my scales might weigh differently to Emma's scales, you know. So trying to get a couple of weights on the same scales.
Yes.
They are all collaborated, but, you know, that still can be a little bit of a difference with them.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. I've had one about older children. So this is about children aged 10 and 12. Now, she's not concerned about growth charts, but she is concerned about how trying to encourage children to make healthier food choices could effectively negatively affect their own body image. We're in such a time, aren't we, now? Like, you know, we had parents who were like, eat all your dinner, otherwise I'm gonna think of the starving children in Africa. I've been there, I've heard that one, because my dad grew up, my dad is a boomer, and ration books still existed when he was a child, and so he had to be grateful for what he was given. He ate what he was given and he liked it, otherwise he was in trouble, and that's just the way he grew up, and that they imparted that onto us millennials, definitely, and caused so many different like body image issues, like, you know, around weight gain and eating healthily or eating what you were given. I always thought it was really funny that I was given giant portions of food to eat and then told that I was fat. That was always fun. But like, now we're in this time where we're trying to heal those ideals, but equally get our children to eat healthily and eat an apple rather than a packet of crisps. It's hard trying to reconcile those two ideas, isn't it? Like our own healing around our own body image without imparting any trauma onto our children at the same time. There's such an awareness about it. So essentially what she said is, my children are older, 10 and 12. But I'd love to hear ways to help children make healthier choices without making them feel negatively about their body weight if they have put on weight. I find it real tricky balance. I'm not sure how to get the messaging right. So, Emma, I'm going to guess this is one for you. Like, you know.
It is a hard one. I fully, you know, it's a really hard time. And also at that sort of age, 11, they're going to be hitting puberty as well. So they're like, you know, around that sort of 8, 9, 10 sort of age, calories and requirements of what they need, like protein, everything else, it stays about the same. Their growth isn't massive. They don't grow a lot. But once they hit like 11, 12, and especially, you know, puberty really kicks in and their requirements and their needs really increase as well. So their appetite and everything else is going to really, really increase. And it's such a delicate age. The thought of ever diet, making a 10-year-old diet or anything like that, I just feel is really, really wrong as well. Like it doesn't help. Things that I would do would be much more positive in terms of getting them involved in the kitchen, get them cooking, choosing some recipes together, maybe picking some recipes with extra vegetables in, or, you know, those sort of things. Just learning about food, learning about, you know, the different food groups, about carbohydrates, you know, choosing the whole grain options, choosing like your protein. And there's something called the Eat Well plate, which kind of, you know, divides everything up into carbohydrates, proteins, you know, your fat, your fruit and vegetables, and, you know, your dairy, your non-dairy alternatives if they don't have dairy. And, you know, just trying to create that balance as well with them and making sure they're getting all the different food groups as well. But yes, I think the more you can get them involved in choosing some recipes, meal planning, all of that side, learning about food, then I think that's probably the biggest skill that will help them more than worrying about, particularly about you know, any of that kind of restrictive language around food at that sort of age, because they are going to be hitting puberty and they are going to go for a big growth spurt. And they also, in terms, especially for girls and stuff like iron requirements, zinc and all of those things really increase as well when they reach, you know, that kind of puberty as well. So again, if you start restricting foods, are you taking away key nutrients like iron and things like that that they might also need as well? So yeah, that's how I would approach it.
Yeah, so I did
quite a bit of a personal experience with this one, because my son is approaching 11 now and he's got to that stage where he's like a bottomless pit and he constantly wants to eat, and I'm looking at him, seeing him blow up but then shoot up. And one of the things that's kind of worked for us here is making sure that, because kids love to snack, don't they? You know, they're not so fussed about the meat one, and he does eat his meals, but he loves to snack, like they want something they can grab quickly. And so what I've tried to do and get him involved in as well is make sure that there's healthy snacks available for him to grab quickly, rather than, you know, having those unhealthy snacks like the crisps, the chocolate and everything, which is quick to grab, but make the healthy snacks. So things like flapjacks that I've made, he likes to do this thing where he chops up strawberries and mango, freezes it with frozen yogurt, like he's seen it on TikTok. So, you know, encourage them with a TikTok little healthy snack, things that they can make. And what else? Oh, like melted chocolate with almonds and stuff and broke it into bar. And actually what I've noticed is since those healthy snacks have been there just for him to grab quickly, he quite often goes for them rather than the crisps and the chocolate bars and things. But it's really difficult to maintain that when you're a working parent and keeping them always available for them. So obviously you can only do so much, but I think if you can, like just getting those healthy choices there, which are quick for them to grab, is really helpful, which I've found here.
Yeah, we do something similar as well. I was just going to say, we keep like baby bells and yogurts and things on a certain shelf in the fridge that are the right height for the kids. And also we have fruit in a fruit bowl that's on the counter that's easy reach for the 3-year-old and the 7-year-old. And then if the 2-year-old wants something, she generally asks her sisters for help as well as us, obviously. But then crisps and chocolate are really high up out of the way. They have to ask for it to get it, because even the 7-year-old standing on a chair can't get to it. So so that's the way we do it at home. And obviously, you know, if they ask for crisps or chocolate, we don't ever say like, no, you can't have it because it's bad for you. We generally put it against like having done something as well. Like, you know, if we ask the 7-year-old to eat as much of a dinner as possible, you know, have you eaten enough to then have this, I guess, there is a kind of negative connotation against it. And it seems more like a treat, I guess. But, you know, they have the healthier options available to them
I think having a healthy options available and accessible is like with anything, isn't it? If it's around and you see it, you're more likely to eat it than if it's, you know, in eyesight. I think the other thing to do with snacks as well is just try and make sure you get most of the food groups. So like what you're making, you know, with the flapjack stuff, but usually having some kind of carbohydrate, protein, you know, some kind of fat like dairy and like fruit or vegetable with it. So they become like little mini meals. Mm-hmm. They're much more filling. And your child's much more less likely to go, I'm still hungry. Like, whereas if they eat a packet of crisps, it's only a carbohydrate. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, they're still going to be hungry. So filling them up, like even things like crackers and cheese with some fruit, you know, things like that, yogurt, fruit, you know, all of those sort of things, getting all those different food groups can sometimes help fill them up a little bit more as well. So that you're not, you know, they're not always just snacking, but they've got enough. Because again, sometimes, especially with the younger children, again, what can happen is if they snack a lot, that it takes away from them eating, you know, a meal later on, because, you know, their stomach's still quite small. So again, it just takes away that appetite as well.
Yeah. Well, excellent. Thank you so much, ladies, for your time today. If you do have any further questions that you didn't get to ask before us recording this podcast, please do reach out to Leanne and Emma. You'll find them on Instagram, but I've also linked their details in the description below. So you'll be able to click through and it will take you straight through to their Instagram account so that you can message them through there. Alternatively, you can join my Facebook community page. I'll put the link down below as well. And Emma and Leanne do hang out there as well. So as well as growing this community for you lovely listeners, my experts are also joining and hanging about as well. So if you do have any questions, you can find them there. You can find them on Instagram. So please do get in contact with them and ask anything that you might have any concerns with. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies. It's been absolutely lovely to have you on again. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Louise.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of Mums, Work and Chaos, please make sure to subscribe on whatever podcasting channel you're listening on at the moment. Or if you'd like to get involved, feel free to email me at mumsworkandchaos@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @mumsworkandchaos.